Diane Kennedy is a CPA and best-selling author. She is a renowned tax strategist and an expert on the creation and protection of wealth.
Diane Kennedy, let's start by talking about the big picture here. We're learning about money. We're learning about finance. And we all like to think we know about money. We use it every day. It comes in, it goes out. But the implication of your work is that there's more to learn, there's more to understand, and that there's a cost to not knowing really what is going on here. Tell us a little bit about that concept.
Well, the term, I think, is financial literacy. And, you know, we know what it means to be literate. It means to be able to read, as a lot of us think of that. But the fact is that finances really has its own vocabulary. You know, an example I use is if you ever talk to an attorney, you know, do you think an attorney has their own language? And everybody says, yes, they speak this language nobody else understands. But the fact is, finances have their own language as well. And the more you can understand those key terms and concepts, the more you understand your own financial numbers and realize that a financial statement is really just telling a story. You know, if you can get to the point where you can read a financial statement and see the story of the numbers, you can predict the future because you can create it.
Isn't that something I can't just hand off to an expert like you? You're a CPA. Can't I just sort of pass my box of receipts and my income statement or my check stubs to the CPA and have it all handled for me? Why would I need to learn this accounting terminology?
Well, John, I hate to disappoint you, but we're not going to turn you into an accountant today. In fact, you don't need to know debits and credits, although I can't imagine why anybody wouldn't think that's the most exciting thing in the world. I've been doing it for so many years. But the fact is, you don't need to know that. The key is to be a true financial master. You need to be able to talk to those people who can do your bookkeeping, who can do your accounting, the people who are keeping up to date on the latest tax strategies. But you need to be able to speak their language so you can really bring them into your team and working with you. And you know, like you said, John, there's a cost to not knowing that. Because if you don't know how to ask the right question, if you don't know how to build your team, if you don't know how to decipher the information you receive, you're stuck with just very poor information, and that means poor decisions.
In your work with people, have you seen sometimes examples of the consequences of a lack of financial literacy, as you call it?
Absolutely. I mean, a story I remember when I first started my practice over 20 years ago, I had two different contractors that came into my practice. They both were having tax work done that year. Both of them made about $50,000 a year. Both, you know, very similar in circumstances, what their businesses were, and they both had horrible bookkeeping records. I mean, they were awful. Now, the first guy, and I'm just going to use the name John, and John, that's not you, but we'll just call him that. The first guy, after we got through sorting through his cardboard box of accounting receipts, you know, some people are familiar with that form of accounting where you throw everything in a box and kind of put it behind the door. That's what he was doing. When we got through, you know, we had to tell him, first of all, how much our accounting bill was, and he wasn't real happy. And then we had to tell him how much he owed the government, and he really wasn't happy. But the thing was with John, he just went away mad. He wasn't going to make any changes. He was just going to go work harder so he could then pay those bills. Now, the second guy, and I'll just call him Bob, same kind of thing. He had the cardboard box. He didn't understand his business. He was mad at us for the bill. He was mad at the government. But then he asked a question that changed the rest of his life. Because the question was, what do I have to do so this never happens again? And it was a great question because I said, you know what we need to do is you need to get a bookkeeper so we can have good records. And then let's start meeting on a regular basis. Let's review the finances together, the financial statements. And so he then started looking at them and he asked in the very beginning very basic questions. You know, what's an asset? What's a liability? What happens if this number goes up? Is that a good thing? And the end result of this is 10 years later, I ran into the first man, John. I saw him on a Sunday driving around in a beat-up pickup truck going out to work on a job because he was in the same spot he was. 10 years later, the second guy, Bob, because he'd learned how to read the finances and he learned how to work on his business instead of just in his business, he made over $1 million that year.
Wow.
That's a big difference.
So what's interesting there, well, there's many interesting points there, but one of them is that it seems that sometimes it takes an element of financial pain before we get to learn that we make ourselves educated, which is a shame, really. And I guess what, in a sense, you're saying is don't wait for the pain before you start your education.
You know, that's great. I mean, a lot of people, very successful people, have gone through a bankruptcy, have gone through just devastating financial circumstances. And I guess there's in there a ray of hope because people have been able to recover no matter where you are right now. On the other hand, you know, if you're just getting started, you don't necessarily have to go through the pain. However, I think it's wise to always look at what has been the cost to you of not having that financial literacy. You know, what deals haven't you been in? What real estate markets have you missed out? What business opportunities? You know, how much do you have in your savings account? How much debt do you have? What has been the cost of not having that good financial literacy? I encourage everyone listening to this, take a look at what's happened in your life as a result of your financial literacy. You know, we all have some element of it. Maybe what are the things that you've thought about money that aren't true, or you've thought about debt or investment that turned out to be not true? Now look at what the cost of that is. And I know it'll be painful, but the more you can feel the pain now, the more you're going to be excited about the rest of the program. So we learn from all of the other great speakers ways to change where you are right now.
Good. Well, let's move on then into the education process itself. And it seems as if from what you're saying that we really have to understand some of the basic language. In order to learn, we're going to have to speak the lingo. We hope that it's not hundreds of terms, that there's a limited amount that we have to manage here. And of course, we have the workbook to help us. But can you introduce us to some of the key terms and ideas that we need to master in order to be able to communicate in this field?
I think this is just vital. I've already used a couple of those terms. The first one is asset. An asset is something you own. It's something that's going to put money in your pocket. And, you know, a lot of people think, well, I have this great asset, I've got a great set of clothes, or, you know, nice jewelry, or whatever. And the fact is that those are things you might have spent money on, but they might not be putting any money in your pocket right now. So a true asset is something that's going to support you. On the other hand, a liability is something you owe. This is something that over time you're going to have to keep paying for. I mean, a great example of that is somebody who's using a credit card to pay for that great set of clothes, maybe. The clothes are going down in value, so it's not really an asset, and yet the liability is still there. In fact, it might even be increasing as the credit debt mounts, and you have to pay the interest costs. So I think assets and liabilities are a great place to get started because it's a way of doing some assessment. Where are you right now?
Let me ask you about that a little further because there's something there that I'm struggling with a bit as I listen to you. My house, for example, I always thought of as my main asset. But in reality, when I'm thinking about it, it's something that takes money out of my pocket, doesn't give me an income. On the contrary, it's a substantial expense every month. So is that an asset or a liability?
Well, you know, John, this is the thing that's interesting is I love the accountant's answer. It depends. And the fact is that there's great tax loopholes available for your house. We call them home loopholes. Now, if you're doing it the normal American way, where the more money you make, the bigger your house is, and you're just struggling to own this house, and now you have to hire a housekeeper to clean it because it's so big, you have to buy more furniture, and you have to decorate it, and it's just taking you money away, well, that's a liability. But if you're taking advantage of some of the tax loopholes, for example, buying a house, maybe fixing it up, living in it for 2 years, and then taking tax-free gain from it, if you're married up to $500,000 every 2 years, well, that's a way that actually your house can put money in your pocket. So I love the answer. It depends.
Same with a car?
You know, a car could be, generally people think of that as a depreciating asset. But you know, if your business is paying for it, or we could even have ways that the auto is just an integral part of your business. Say you've got a delivery service or a chauffeur or something like that. You know, clearly your auto becomes an asset then.
You mentioned depreciation, which is a familiar term and I sort of understand it. But can you explain it from your perspective, what this term really means?
Well, it's interesting because there's a couple of different things to think about when we use that word depreciation or depreciating. When I talked about the car, and I said it was a depreciating asset, which means it's going down in value every year. You know, you might have paid $80,000 for that really nice car, and next year it's really only worth $60,000. It's a depreciating asset. On the other hand, most real estate investments go up in value. Those are called appreciating assets. And yet at the same time, we have that same element of something called depreciation in your real estate. Now, let's just really flip this on its side. When it comes to real estate, even though the property's going up in value, it's appreciating, the government says, we're going to let you take a special tax break and let you depreciate off a portion of the value. In fact, depending on the property, we're going to say in 27 and a half years if it's residential or 39 years if it's commercial, we think at the end of that it's going to be worthless. We're going to let you completely write off the value of that. That's a phantom expense that helps your tax bracket. So it's an asset that goes up in value. In this case, we love depreciation. But if it's an auto or your clothes you're buying or something like that, it's going down in value. We don't like depreciation.
Let's just sum up on liabilities and assets because I want to be sure that this is really well understood. An asset, very simply, is something, it's not just something valuable that I own. It's something that's actually bringing money into my life. And a liability is something that is not a simple debt or whatever. It's something that is regularly taking money out of my life.
Well put. And that's probably at the very simplest level. We've got the assets and liabilities. And now, John, let's add another wrinkle on top of that. Because when it comes to liabilities, which are really debt, we have good debt and we have bad debt. And just adding this other wrinkle, a good debt is a debt that might be associated to an asset, maybe a business or a real estate investment that's going up in value. In this case, we're being able to use other people's money to make even more money. Say we have $10,000. With our $10,000, we can buy a little tiny piece of property, or we can leverage that. We're using debt here. We can leverage that $10,000 into a $100,000 piece of property that goes up in value. In that case, we've got good debt because we've been able to buy more property. In this case, we're assuming that we've been following Dolph DeRusse's plan to buy smart. So we've got a good asset that's bringing us cash flow and appreciation. Now, on the other hand, if we say we're going to instead just go use our credit card to charge up a really nice vacation that doesn't help us other than give us a nice tan or something, that there is no real value to that, that's what we might call bad debt. So good debt and bad debt. Good debt is supporting an asset that's actually bringing us money. Bad debt is not. Bad debt generally goes to buy these depreciating assets or things that just don't add any real value to our balance sheet.